I've been to New York a number of times, and I sit with top literary agents and editors. Now, these people are often saying no to people. No more books here. My client lists are full, all that kind of thing. But when I talk to them one-on-one, they're often asking me, they're saying, you know, Terry, where's the next Joel Osteen? Where's the next, you know, Rick Warren? Where's the next Jerry Jenkins Left Behind books? Where is that? And so what that shows me is, even though they may be saying no to you, really, they're actively looking every day.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by the GoingNorthPodcast.com shop. It is going to help you have northbound direction to your own success. If you want a great inspirational quote like advance others to advance yourself, or today a reader, tomorrow a leader, heck, even some puns like pile on and always fully booked on your tote bag, mug, hoodie, heck, even a t-shirt, and many, many other items. Head over to GoingNorthPodcast.com, click on the shop tab, and cop yourself some merchandise indeed. And that's GoingNorthPodcast.com/shop. And today on the Highlight Reel Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special awesome human for you today, courtesy of one of the best websites on planet Earth, going strong today like 8-pack abs, known as podmatch.com. The wonderful site where podcast guests get to connect with podcast hosts, and if they're freaking cool, they're freaking in. And today's guest is cooler than two cucumbers, indeed, heck, maybe even cooler than seven cucumbers, because we got one heck of a heavyweight champion in the publishing business, my friends. That's right, indeed. You're going to be up for a treat that's good enough to you, because today's wonderful guest, y'all, this wonderful, wonderful international best-selling author, y'all, is a father, a husband, as well as an acquisitions editor, which I believe is a first for this podcast, believe it or not, as well as a communications expert and information marketer. So let's give it up for the T to the W, the terrific and wonderful Terry Whalen. How you doing today, Terry?
Dom, great to be with you. It's always an honor.
Right, indeed. Honored to have you here, man. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. A man's been kicking butt for years to come and helping so many folks get to the other side in the business of immortality, known as authorship. So did you always grow up loving books as a mini, Terry?
I did. I always had my nose in a book growing up and knew they were important. But part of the reason I do this, Dom, is because I know books change people's lives. And I know that firsthand, because when I was a sophomore in college, I really drifted away from my faith and my relationship and everything. And I was sitting at my old Royal typewriter with about 30 other people. We were producing a full-size newspaper 7 days a week at Indiana University. And I kept putting my fingers on the wrong keys. And I kept saying to myself, Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ. And this little blonde-haired girl that was sitting next to me turned to me. She said, oh, Terry, don't say that, because one of these days when you really need Jesus, you'll turn to him and he won't be there. And I thought, what's this? I'm a Christian. I go to church when I'm at home. I read the Bible in church when I'm at home. Hey, I knew nothing. I had no relationship here, Dom. But she encouraged me to go to a little bookstore a couple blocks off the Indiana campus, and maybe I'd find a book that interested me. And so I wandered down there a couple of days later, and I bought this book called Jesus the Revolutionary. I thought, how in the world could Jesus be a revolutionary? And I read that book and it showed me a different side of Jesus than I'd ever seen before. And about that time, some people invited me to a little gathering in downtown Bloomington. They were sitting on little scraps of carpets with little candles lit. And those people had something that I didn't have. And so I got a Bible, and my journalism colleagues thought I was a little nuts because instead of, you know, working for the Chicago Tribune or the Indianapolis Star or one of those places, I joined Wycliffe Bible Translators. And I spent 17 years with those guys. And there's a New Testament here on my shelf that wouldn't have existed if I hadn't done that kind of thing. But I know books are really important because they change people's lives. And I know that firsthand because a book changed my life.
Amen to that indeed. Amen to that indeed. So my goodness, it sounds like you raised the church and got distracted for a bit and then found your way back, my man. So how was that redirection process?
Well, the redirection process was that I worked in linguistics for about 10 years, and then I wandered back to my writing and started writing for magazines. And then I went to a writer's conference, and I met with an editor, and she said she had a problem. And I always listen when the editors tell me they have a problem, you know. And so I said, what's your problem? She said, well, I have all these books that we publish at David C. Cook, and we're supposed to encourage children to think about the world, and there's a world mission out there. What kind of ideas do you have? And I thought, well, I'd been reading a lot of kids' books to my kids back then, and so I pitched her this idea of what if we took real pictures and combine them with a cartoon character and encourage kids that there were different occupations that they could do with their lives. And she said, that's a good idea. Write that up and send that to me. And so I went home, I wrote it up. That wasn't the book, but I ended up working with her back and forth. And that idea became my first book that was published in 1992. It's a little children's book called When I Grow Up, I Can Go Anywhere for Jesus. And it combines real pictures from Wycliffe with a cartoon character to show kids that, hey, they can go anywhere. I mean, my kids, one day they wanted to be a pilot. The next day they wanted to be a doctor or a lawyer or something. So this shows kids that they can go anywhere with their lives for Jesus, you know.
Ah, me like indeed, me like indeed. Sounds like a great first book to start off with, the kids' book. It's like, hey, it's a simple message. And the good news is, it sounds like you already had the photos ready to go. It's just finding the right folks to collaborate with.
It was. And then, from there, I ended up writing biographies, writing books with other people, all kinds of things that I've done through the years on the book front.
Oh, you can say that again. That's right. And what really caught me about your wonderful bio is that you actually wrote a biography about the legendary league great Billy Graham, man. So what inspired you?
Well, it's been about over 30 years ago now, but I actually worked for Mr. Graham. I was associate editor at Decision Magazine back when the office was in Minneapolis, and we were doing 1.8 million copies of the magazine every issue. So it was a great, great honor to get to do that kind of thing. And after I left Decision, Bethany House had a little series of biographies, and they called me up and asked me if I would write this one about Billy Graham. And so I wrote this book for them, part of their Men of Faith series that came out. But you know how these publishing houses worked on one buys another one and they gobble them up. And so that's what happened with Bethany House. They were actually bought by Baker Books a number of years ago. And when that process happens, they put a lot of stuff out of print is what happens. And so they put my little book out of print. And so a number of years ago, Mr. Graham was in poor health. And I sort of thought to myself selfishly, this is really going to be a bad deal for me when Billy Graham passes, because I don't even have a book about the man in the bookstore. But I was working, and I still work for a New York publishing house, Morgan James Publishing. And so we took the old book, got the type back in the computer. I didn't even have the type on the computer, so I had to rekey in the book. And I completely revised my old book. I got a new cover. I got endorsements. I got different people to, you know, I got Luis Palau to write the foreword for the book, for example. And I've written a book about Luis, and so I knew him in order to be able to get that done, and got my book back out in the bookstore before Mr. Graham passed. And it's an unauthorized biography, but it's authorized in the sense that I checked every word of it with the association. So I know it's got all the true and right stuff that's in it. It's just, I get some grief from people sometimes when they go to the Cove, the Billy Graham Training Center, because my biography isn't there. And it's because we've asked Franklin a couple times. I've known Franklin Graham for years, and he said no. So yeah, I can't go back and ask again on that particular point, but it's helped a lot of people out there. It's a simple little book that people can read in a couple of days and get the picture of Billy Graham's life and what happened there.
That's what I'm talking about indeed. Well, congrats on getting you right back out there. You'll love to see that part of the wonderful other side of the ordeal.
It's not easy what happens with these books. So you have to be persistent and consistent in that process. That's all part of it.
True statement indeed. Out of curiosity, maybe a long shot, is there any lessons from Billy Graham's life that is actually applied in your life to this day with your business and how you conduct yourself?
One of the key lessons that I learned from Mr. Graham was just the integrity and the way that, you know, he did what he said he was going to do. And that's not always true in our world, Don, that, you know, people make promises and then they don't carry through with them. So I think that consistency that Mr. Graham had and the way that he lived his life is a message that really shines through and something that I try to continue to do day in and day out.
That's what I'm talking about, dude. That's what I'm talking about, dude. And you got so much integrity and you're loved by so many folks out there, because with you working with Morgan James, you've helped so many folks get their books out there. Heck, even a couple past guests on the show. I'm not sure if you work with them directly, but they were able to get their books published through Morgan James.
Yeah, we've been around. We're starting our 21st year as a publisher, and we've produced over 6,000 titles. So there's a lot of stuff. I heard our founder today say over 20 million books that we printed out there. So it's a lot of, there's a lot of material we've worked on.
I can say that again. So that's a million plus books or so a year, sounds like that. Was it 20 million?
20 yeah, million? About 20 million, yeah.
Wow, okay. That's freaking awesome. That's what I'm talking about. So my goodness, not only have you helped folks get to that other side of publishing, you've published multiple books yourself, and I guess at the time of this recording, I guess your most recent magical book is The 10 Publishing Myths, The Insights That Every Author Needs to Succeed. So my goodness, what led to you writing that wonderful, short, easy read?
Well, I talk with authors all the time, and I realize that often they have unrealistic expectations about what's going to happen with their book. And so I wrote this book to try to help authors understand that a lot of the publishing process is really outside of anything that they or anybody else can control. But there are some practical things that they can do. And that's what I really tried to emphasize in this book, is give people some practical actions that they can take no matter whether their publisher helps them or not, whether they self-publish or whatever they do. And in my experience with this, Dom, it happened when Mark Victor Hansen, actually the co-author on Chicken Soup and Soul, invited me to come to Mega Book Marketing University in 2007. And at that point in my life, I'd written about 50 books for traditional publishers, and I'd gotten advances, and they made pretty books, but I was getting negative royalty statements because my books really weren't selling and earning back, so I wasn't making any money for this. And I sat there with about 400 people. I got invited there because I was a literary agent and I took pitches from some people there, but I sat there with 400 people listening to all these people talk about what you needed to do if you were a book author. And it's almost like I woke up during that experience, because back then I was doing very little myself to be telling people about my book. I had a little terrywhalen.com website, and that was it. I wasn't blogging. Social media hadn't really started or taken off then. I had no newsletter. I wasn't doing anything really to be talking and telling people about my book. And one of the speakers at that event was Jack Canfield, the other co-author on the Chicken Soup for the Soul books. Now, Jack has written this book called The Success Principles. And it was a New York Times bestseller. And I love that book. And the very first success principle says that I will take 100% responsibility for my own success. Now, none of us want to take 100% responsibility for our own success. We want somebody else to do it. We want the publisher to do it, my agent, my publicist, anybody other than me. But during that conference in 2007, I decided to take 100% responsibility for my own success. And so I decided that I was going to get on social media, start following people, make connections with people. I was going to start blogging. My blog has over 1,700 entries that are in it. About a year or so ago, I found an article that said I was one of the top 27 content producers out there with all that material in my blog, that free stuff in my blog. I mean, I had no idea, but I was just doing it every week consistently. And that's what it became. And so that's my message for people that these myths is, if they're really struggling, they can find success if they change, take their own responsibility, and then start to do it consistently. It'll turn it around for them.
Yeah, well said indeed, because it's so true. It'll definitely turn around once you take that responsibility, because, yeah, a lot of folks be like, yeah, once I publish this book, I'll make millions of dollars and, like, take over the world and be a celebrity and maybe be on Oprah and all this other good stuff. And it's like, nope. Especially in 2024. You're going to need to work a lot harder.
Yeah. Well, that's why I put this book together, is to give authors practical actions. And then I've set up the site at publishingoffer.com, where people can go over there and they can get the book for me for only $10, including the shipping and $200 worth of bonuses. So the whole idea is they can read this, you know, in a brief amount of time, get some practical advice about things that they can do, whether they have a big publisher, whether they self-published, or however they did it. There are actions that they can take. And in each chapter, I call them MBAs, Mythbuster Actions, that they can take with their own writing to get it out there and succeed.
You'll love to see it indeed. So my goodness, shoot. I think probably one of my favorite myths out of the 10 in this magical book is probably the fact that, shoot, the editor will fix all my mistakes.
Yeah, everybody depends on those editors to fix all that stuff. And that's not really how it works out at the end of the day, often. So they have to take their own responsibility for it and do whatever they need to do to get it done. Even my last book, I've done four books now with Morgan James over the last 12 years. In my last book that I did, I was headed off to a big writers conference with over 400 people who were going to be there. My book wasn't going to come out till October, but I pushed my book along through the process and actually dropped shipped some books to the conference from the printer. And I sold some books. I was happy about that. But one of the people who bought my books emailed me and said, you got to fix the typos in this book, Terry. And I'm like, what are we talking about here? And so they scanned a couple pages and I thought, oh no, I signed off too quickly, Dom, on my own book. And so I actually took a step back. I hired a proofreader, paid Morgan James to reset all the type in my book. And I did all that before October when it came out. So I'm really glad I did all that because my book's been well received and well reviewed. But kind of learned my own hard lesson there to make sure I got all the details straightened out before I sign off on it. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, I can say that again because the typos, they're dark. They're persistent. They can hide well too.
They wouldn't hide and seek.
Oh, it's perfect. I got Excalibur out the stone and the Ten Commandments at the same time with this book out finally. Oh no.
No, not the typo. It's five of them. Oh, I got all of them.
Yeah, you know, and everybody forgets. I mean, they say with the self-publishing books, there's over 11,000 new books to come out every day. So authors can't just sit back and depend on somebody else to do it. They're the ones with the greatest passion and greatest desire for their books. So they have to sort of take the bull by the horn and get out there and be telling people about it, however it is. Like, here on this podcast or whatever it is that they're doing to tell people about the importance of their book.
Hey, you can say that again, indeed. You definitely can say that again, indeed. So I know all of them are probably your favorite, but has there been one of the myths that really sticks out to you? It's like, yeah, this one was definitely fun to write about here.
The main one is the first one that I had is that my book will make a lot of money because everybody just thinks that they're going to write a book, they're going to put it out there, and they're just going to roll in dough because they got their book published, which is great. Don't get me wrong, but one of my friends that passed actually last year, Dan Miller, wrote 48 Days. And which was a New York Times bestseller. And he had just done his taxes when I saw him. And so he realized that a very small percentage of his overall income was really from his book royalties. The bulk of his income came from other things. The speaking opportunities, the groups that he was involved in, the other products he was able to make. His book gave him the authority to do that kind of thing. And a lot of people don't think about that. They just lean it all on the book and figure that's what's going to do it. But it's really all these other things that you do that allows you to have the kind of life that you want to have there and make the money that you have. It's not necessarily the book.
Yep. So true indeed. So true indeed. It's like, hey, it's like probably one key on the ring of keys.
That's right. It takes a lot of different keys to get all the locks unlocked at the end of the day.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, my goodness, my goodness. No, probably one of the keys to your success is persistence. And with all the wonderful persistence that happens, there's probably some setbacks along the way when you try to make it a straight line to your next win. So has there been any major setbacks that actually turned out to be a setup for your success?
Oh, I've had a lot of setbacks through the years, Don. I mean, we were talking about Billy Graham, actually, and one of the things that happened there at the association is my boss, my editor back then, sat me down and gave me a 60-day warning and 14 things that he didn't like that I was doing. And so I'd never had anybody do that before. So I went down to meet with the head of HR, Billy Graham, asked what I should do. She said, oh, you got to go meet with him. So I set a meeting with him. He had his little legal pad. I went over all 14 things that I was doing and how I was taking care of it. And at the end of the meeting, he looked at me and he said, how do you think you're doing, Terry? I'm like, I'm the eternal optimist here. I think I'm doing great. But the real question here is, how do you think I'm doing? He took about 10 more minutes and discounted every single thing. I was out the door. The last 30 days that I was there were probably some of the most painful in my editorial life, because every single thing that I did, he redid and then went to the photocopier and copied it. Now, I don't know if you know this about Billy Graham, but they save every scrap of paper that has the man's name on it. So I'm sure there's a big, thick folder somewhere in the association about what a screw-up Terry Whalen was. Because, you know, the final day, I packed my little stuff in a box, and they escorted me out of the building. And one of the guys that left at the association at the same time that I did is Tom Phillips, who endorsed my Billy Graham book. And still working for Billy Graham, actually, today. He told me that God had freed me from Billy Graham so I could work for the whole body of Christ. And that's really what happened to me. I mean, I got out of that particular ministry, and that's where my writing life exploded. I started writing books for other people and biographies, like, you know, for Chuck Colson and John Perkins and Bishop Philip Porter at Promise Keepers, and just all kinds of things that I've been able to do and write through the years, which I wouldn't have been able to do if I was working for Billy Graham. So it's like I was released from that in order to be able to do what I did.
Me like it, dude. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. That definitely is a perfect setup right there. Perfect answer to that question, dude. Because, yeah, it's like on paper. It's like, dude, this is probably some people's dream job, depending on the situation. But, hey. Need to do something bigger and better and more impactful.
Yeah, you can only see those things in hindsight. You can't really see them at the time, you know. And it's happened to me a number of times, you know, in my career. Even when I was at David C. Cook, I was their acquisitions editor, and I'd never worked inside a publishing house before. And so I learned a ton about how in the world they make decisions about which books they publish and which books they don't, and all that kind of thing. And I thought I was doing what I was supposed to be doing, Don, but they sat me down one day and said that they had to let me go. And I'm like, let me go. I'm a part of a revolution here. You know, I mean, how can you do that? But they did. And so I was trooping off shortly after that to a writer's conference. And one of the people I was riding with, he told me, he said, well, Terry, you just joined one of the biggest groups in Christian publishing. And I'm like, okay, what's that? He said, former Cook employees. And it's really true. You know, I am a part of that group. I'm a former David C. Cook employee. And I joined that group when I left the company. And there's a lot of us that are out there, actually. And, you know, the other doors of opportunity opened up. And I've been doing other stuff ever since. And that's my encouraging message to people that are hearing this, that if they get let go, then they still have to keep going. And there's another opportunity for you out there. I sincerely believe that we live in one of the greatest times in human history. We just have to be knocking on the right door, pitching the right place, and see that opportunity, because it's certainly out there. But you have to take action and find it. You can't just ask it to come to you. It's not going to come to you. You've got to be doing something.
That's what I'm talking about, dude. Definitely got to be doing something, indeed. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. Well, speaking of doing something, you're probably doing a lot these days. So is there any big projects you got coming up on horizon that you're excited about?
Well, I'm excited about all kinds of things. I mean, I have authors that are publishing with Morgan James. I'm working with those people. I'm working on a book right now that just sort of came out of the blue. I've taken a crazy deadline here. I've got to get 90 devotionals written by December 15th. And so I am spending quite a bit of time at my computer writing those things and trying to get those going, because that's not too far away here, Dom. So I've got to have a book manuscript together, but I think it's going to be another good book. So I'm excited about it, and I keep at it. People wonder how in the world I've been able to write over 60 books, and it's not hard. I write one page at a time, just like everybody else. One chapter, one book at a time. It's that simple. You just have to do it over and over and over.
I guess on that note then, so since you are so prolific with words, do you have any particular writing routines or rituals that you do to get yourself in the zone to write?
Not particularly. I'm one of these people that I've tried to overcome my different hurdles and mindsets that I can, if I have 10 minutes, I'm going to sit down and bang it out, whatever it is. If I have, I don't need 3 hours. I need whatever time I have, I'm going to take advantage of that time, whether it's early, late, in the afternoon, whenever it is. These people put roadblocks in their minds and say, I can only write when it's quiet, or I can only write when I'm in a coffee shop or wherever. So I've decided to just throw that out, and I sit at my keyboard whenever I can, and write whenever I can, and get it done week after week. It's sort of that's part of my routine, and I think it comes from my journalism training too, that I don't have to get in a certain mindset or something, but I just keep writing.
You like indeed. Might even have to have you back on for the devotional series when it comes out. Not sure if it's going to be any taste of what to expect. Is it going to be a men's devotional, women's devotional, or?
It's for men and women. I'm telling little Bible stories, and then bridging it to a modern day kind of thing. So yeah, it's I think it's gonna work. It's gonna be good.
Sweet. That's what I'm talking about indeed. So since you're going on a bit of a tour promoting the wonderful work that you're doing, is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often?
That's a good question. I guess I would say that writers get rejected a lot, and I get rejected a lot. I mean, people turn down my offers at Morgan James of contracts and other things, and so I get rejected a lot. But you know what I found is that I've been to New York a number of times, and I sit with top literary agents and editors. Now, these people are often saying no to people. No more books here. My client lists are full, all that kind of thing. But when I talk to them one-on-one, they're often asking me, they're saying, Terry, where's the next Joel Osteen? Where's the next, Rick Warren? Where's the next Jerry Jenkins Left Behind books? Where is that? And so what that shows me is, even though they may be saying no to you, really, they're actively looking every day. They're opening their email, they're answering their phone, they're looking at their physical mail. So people should know that. And they should know that there is great opportunity out there. You just have to keep on keeping on at the end of the day.
Weird. That's what I'm talking about the days. I'm talking about the day. That's right. So it sounds like you gotta be like water on a rock after a while. Wear them down.
You may have to wear them down, and but it's like selling real estate. You only need one. So you've got to find that one person that's going to do it for you. at the end of the day. I was thinking about Mark Victor Hansen and Jack Canfield. A lot of people have forgotten they got rejected over 140 times for those Chicken Soup for the Soul books. That's a lot of rejection. And so what they learned to do whenever they got a rejection, they would say to themselves, next, because they were looking for the next opportunity, the next thing that they were going to send out. That's a hopeful sign. And so I always encourage authors to do that kind of thing. They need to take some simple action like that that helps them not get discouraged and not tuck their stuff in a folder where they don't try anymore, but keep on trying to find the right place for them. And I don't know where it is. I mean, I keep learning all the time that I can't predict what other people are going to do. I can't predict what's going to happen with your book and your material. The only person I can have any hope of doing anything about is right here, myself. So I have to take my own actions and continue to pitch people and see what doors open up. And that's what I encourage every author to do, actually, is to continue to be out there.
Ah, continue to be out there indeed. And it's hilarious too, because you think it'll be easier for you being an acquisitions editor for a big publisher already.
We're working on a lot of great books at Mortgage James, and I really like what I do, and so I'm still doing that, still sending contracts to authors and talking to them about all that. And so it's a mixture that I have. I write my own stuff, but I'm also working on other people's books as well.
That's what I'm talking about indeed. Well, since books are food for the mind, your fabulous book, 10 Publishing Myths, Insights Every Author Needs to Succeed. If that book were a food, what would it be and why?
Oh, I think it would probably be some sort of rich dessert, you know, that people would eat and consume and really enjoy, I think, is what I would say, because it has sort of a combination of flavors, just like the dessert would, but stories, as well as practical actions that people can take with their book and their publishing life. So I want them to get it and consume it, mark it all up, put little post-its in it, take action on these things in order to succeed with their books.
Yeah, be lucky indeed. That's right. This was dessert, y'all. That's right indeed. It's a whole buffet. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. Well, we're coming down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive, and that is, if you're to wake up tomorrow and you are 25 again, but you're still in the current year, what advice would you give to yourself?
Oh, boy. I would say just keep growing and learning, keep reading, keep working at it, because there's hopeful things ahead. And you may not be able to see those things, but you have to take them by faith and keep moving forward every day.
Yeah, every day indeed, every day indeed. Well, I know folks probably need to do is, when it comes to adding things to their lives every day, is your content, my man. So for those who need to keep up with you, cop some copies of your magical books and stay on the lookout for all your future projects, what's the best way for folks to do so, Terry?
Well, I give them two ways. One of the ways they can get the physical book is to go to publishingoffer.com. That'll take you to my special book offer for 10 Publishing Myths. Or they can get the 11th myth, which you got, which one of my friends, Alice Kreider, when she endorsed this book, told me that I was missing the 11th myth. And I said, what's that, Alice? She says, well, the 11th myth should be that if I send my book to Oprah, she'll book me on her show. And so I said, well, that's a good myth. And so I wrote that chapter, and that's what I give away. So if you go to terrylinks.com/11th myth, that'll take you to a page where you can put your email address in there, and I'll send you that 11th myth, which looks just like the rest of the book. And that's my free gift to you.
Whoa, we heard that right from the magical publishing myth buster himself, y'all. That's right, Dave the Terrific Terry's got you covered, y'all. So check out those magical links in the magical show notes. We're going to put them right there for you, so that way you can not only cop the magical publishing myths book, but check out his other books too, because they're all freaking great with something to offer you. I'd love to see it indeed. Heck, especially if you got some kiddos. That's right, indeed. Need some good old faith in their lives, y'all. Some faith building. That's right, indeed. Brick by brick. In this case, page by page or book by book. Well, before any more rabbit holes appear, any parting words before we close up shop?
Oh, I'm very grateful, Don, for just the opportunity to be able to talk to you and talk to your listeners out there. Like I said at the beginning, books are really important to me because they change people's lives, and so that's why I do this day in and day out and work in the publishing business.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in, and if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network. Bonus points for three. And be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.